What's going on, Orlando City fans? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Rochon, and today we will be previewing the NYCFC match because, in my opinion, we didn't really learn much from the Nashville match. We learned that we suck at defending the ball in the air, which we already knew. We learned that we still have a pretty potent attack when we get in front of goal. And we learned that we have a very, very high dependence on Mauricio Pereira. We also learned that Jordan Bender is a young kid who is going to do the safe thing on the ball because that's what young kids do. Did we learn anything else, guys?
Insert the silence.
We learned that Gavin still uses every cliche in the book.
That is true.
We also learned that Gavin is the first overall winner of the Lions Blog Predictor Challenge because he is the smartest man on OC Twitter when it comes to predicting results.
This claim about contest results is disputed.
I won fair and square. I did not mess with
hashtag. I not recounted my contest winner.
I recounted everything. I won fair and square. But really, though, congratulations to Brian for winning the jersey. It actually just got there today. He posted about it. He got a DK away jersey. So shout out to Brian. Thank you so much for listening. So thank you so much for entering. And fun fact, Adam, Brian is into disc golf. And a friend of his told him, a friend of his who is into disc golf, told him that you were into disc golf and that's why he started listening. So thank you, Adam, being a disc golf player.
I did talk to Brian a bit. He's actually directing a tournament that I forgot to register for. So shout out to Brian, but maybe I'll see you this weekend at the triples tourney.
All right. Well, also my fan just turned on, so sorry for the background noise. Let's get some sponsors out of the way. First is Lose Bonsai. Run by OC Twitter's Jonathan Ridner, Lose Bonsai offers the finest quality bonsai trees and products at the lowest possible prices. Speaking of prices, Lose Bonsai is currently offering 15% off to all Orlando City supporters. All you have to do is enter the code GOCITY in all caps at the checkout. 15% off will be discounted from your order. Website is losebonsai.biz, L-O-U-S bonsai.biz. Next is, of course, Cappy Subs, which we finally were able to go try when Adam let us go and have his fantastic subs. And they were amazing. Honestly, it was so good, Adam. So thank you so much. They were delicious. You can order over the phone at 407-647-9099 or online at cappysubsfl.com. All one word. They're at 501 North Orlando Avenue in Maitland, Florida, not Winter Park. Thank you again, Adam. I can taste it now. It was so good. The roast beef sandwich was fire, bro. It was fire. Make sure to leave a 5-star to Cappy's because it was fire. Make sure to leave a 5-star review to us as we are fire. And with that, Daniel, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. I'm actually quite jealous of Adam right now. I'm going to tell you why.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, Adam's getting these listeners now because of his disc golf hobby, and I'm actually just really disappointed that nobody who likes my hobby is coming to listen to us.
Okay, what's your hobby?
Extreme ironing.
What?
Extreme ironing. I enter ironing contests, and we try to iron our clothes better than everyone else.
Daniel, yeah, I think I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that due to the nature of our discussions, a large part of our listeners are fucking nerds. So I think that's pretty
good. But they're not extreme ironers, are they?
If there was an extreme ironing competition, I don't think it'd be a bunch of nerds. I think it'd be like a bunch of like old parents.
Right. And what am I? An old parent.
Yeah. So thank you, Daniel, for bringing the old parent population to this podcast. I appreciate it.
Of course. Absolutely.
And remember that on our Patreon, Daniel will be doing videos of him demonstrating ironing techniques.
Extreme iron techniques.
Plus treasure at Patreon at patreon.com/Daniel's Extreme Ironing.
There you go. And I also want to try to set the world record for the amount of Werther's Originals that can fit in my mouth at one time.
What?
Also on Patreon at patreon.com/Daniel's Extreme Ironing.
Well, I'm glad to hear you're doing well, Daniel. You are being yourself today. I love it. Chase, how about yourself?
I'm good. Daniel always gives me a lot to follow up on, and I just can't do it, man. But I'm doing good.
Can't live up to the hype? That's like younger brother syndrome right there.
Yeah, very younger brother.
And Adam, you doing good?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to first of all, I'm going to have to actually listen to this episode so I can like grab that audio of you talking about Cappies and just like play it on a bunch of radio stations. thanks for the free ad copy, Gavin.
No. Adam's paying for it. But yeah, let's start the episode finally. And first I want to get right into it, and I want to start with us. We're previewing the NYCFC game, obviously, and I kind of did some research, not a ton, but just a little bit, and let's get straight into it. So, Adam, I'm going to start with you. Obviously, our ball in air defending is garbage, right? We've been letting balls in left, right, and center. We're one of the lowest in the league.
Spanish for yes.
Yes, I know. We're one of the lowest percentages in the league of aerial duels won around the pitch, not just in the box. Mm-hmm. But
garbage, Adam, in Spanish would be basura, which anyways, is what our aerial defense is.
Just facts.
So we're clear.
While it seems doom and gloom that we are facing an in-form NYCFC team, do you think this game might suit us a bit due to their tendency to keep the ball on the ground? And the stat is that they are seventh least in the league at crosses per 90.
Don't like putting the ball in the air. Be it long ball, be it cross. It's not their game. And I think that it is a boon for us that we might get Mendez back for this game because he could be huge. I actually did do a bit of research on this one. I watched a few of their recent matches, and I noticed that NYCFC is most dangerous when they can get particularly one of their central playmakers, particularly when Alex Ring has a lot of time on the ball to facilitate their attack, and they can get Castellanos moving and whoever else moving forward. But Castellanos is their main danger man moving forward. He moves around like all across that final third, and he's generally their target. When their central playmakers get time on the ball, they can be extremely, extremely dangerous in picking out those passes and those combination plays. When they don't have time, they are prone to turnovers, and they don't seem to be able to create much through crosses, and they don't seem to be able to create much through long balls. So if we can get Mendez back, who's very good at being aggressive in a midfield press, particularly if we have Uri who can sit back and shield him when they get by Mendez, then I think that could be a very effective tactic combined with a high press with their front line for breaking up their preferred style of attack.
So I find it funny you say that, because while I was doing my research, I found an interesting stat that I wanted to say. We have the highest percentage in the league of tackles. Not the highest tackles, but the highest every time someone attempts a dribble against us, we get the ball off them the most through a tackle. It's like 43% of the time or something like that. Number one in the
league. That's pretty good.
It's funny you say that, because that's exactly what we've been trying to do, just be better at on-ball tackling.
Yeah, Daniel, that's how you have to stop NYCFC.
Yeah. So, Daniel, do you agree with Adam's statement there that's the best way to go forward with this team defensively? Because obviously they have a very, very, very big offensive threat, which we'll talk about later. But do you agree with Adam there?
Yeah, I think I mean, the way you got to really play in NYC, I do agree with Adam. I'd like to add that, you know, you got to press them, you got to make them uncomfortable. As uncomfortable as possible, and not just don't give him too much respect. I mean, we've seen NYC come to Orlando a few times and play extremely well. You know, they always give it a good game, and we've got to be smart. We've got to press at the right times. Timing's everything, and that's a good statistic you raised there. The amount of tackles won, because it shows that we're pressing a lot. That shows us we're pressing pretty well. You know, that our game is kind of coming together, and defensively on that respect. So, yeah, I do agree with Adam. It's going to be a game of cool heads and concentration, though, because they're the type of team that, you know, you get it one mistimed challenge or get a player out of position, they can hurt you pretty bad.
So moving right along, Chase. When I did my research for this, like I said, I didn't do a ton, but what I did is I took my stereotypes that I have for our team and the stereotypes I have for NYCFC and see if the numbers backed that up. So I'm going to be doing a lot of numbers this episode, because obviously we don't have anything to go off of other than the 1-1 draw and the 3-1 win. But those were a long time ago, and these teams are in two different forms. So I figured let's talk about what's going on now, obviously. So NYCFC finished the season with the highest number of defensive pressures in the attacking third, which means they are a high-pressing team, which we knew. That being said, who do you want to start in midfield? Oh, my. And who do you think will start? I'm just going to leave it at that, and we'll talk about it.
So I think that we're probably going to see, you know, Mauricio is healthy, I believe, so he'll be able to step right in. And I think that we'll see probably Junior next to him and then Sebas at that six. And I think that does kind of benefit us playing out of a high press, because we've kind of talked about Sebas in the sense that he's not necessarily like such an avid ball progressor where he will, you know, break lines a lot and put the ball forward 30 yards and get us out of pressure that way. Like, he's very good in kind of these close, tight spaces, which I think, you know, same thing with Pereira and even our center backs and stuff like that. And I think that bodes well to get out of a press and then get upfield. And then, you know, if you break that press, you have a lot of space moving forward. And yeah, just to put it simply, I guess, NYCFC, like, I assume maybe that stat has kind of changed a little bit as well with, you know, Hebert being out, because, you know, the players that they have kind of in the front line are very diminutive, very able and willing to get on the ball and then quickly going to turn it around and then create a chance for themselves and for others. And if we're coming up against a team like that, I think that plays into Sebas' strengths and Mauricio as well. And Junior, especially recently, has maybe looked a little bit shaky, particularly with the ball at his feet. But because he is going to be that bit more of a physical presence, I think that he's going to hold value here. And, you know, he's a good player, so I think that he might step up. But yeah, I can't see Joey starting this game, obviously, and, you know, Jordan as well, but those kind of go without saying. And maybe if Yuri was, you know, a little bit more, you know, has more games under his belt going into the playoffs, we could see him. But I almost think that maybe Sebas might be more suited for this game, particularly against a team that does like to high press and, you know, put pressure on the ball. And he can maybe be that one that plays in between the center backs, and then we can get the ball upfield. And yeah, that's just, you know, basically, I feel like the key to getting out of a high press at times is that quick interchange between the midfielders, and I think he's really capable of that.
So here's my opinion, because that's what we do here. I just say my opinion, and I disagree with all of you. Basically, I don't want to see Urso in the game. and this is just on my...
Gavin is unfortunately correct.
Stereotype of how NYCFC play and how the numbers back that up. And then how I know how Urso plays that we've seen throughout the season. He does tend to give the ball away. And yes, everybody else's stereotype is that Mendes tends to give the ball away. He gives the ball away when asked to do the wrong things. And he's been asked to do the wrong things plenty of times this season because we've been missing Pereira. When he's asked to do the right things that are good for him, that short passing play, that short pass and move, not be the attacking onus is not on him is what I'm trying to say. Mendes is perfectly fine in that, and like Chase said, is the right player to play through a press alongside Yuri Rosell. Unfortunately, we have Urso in there. Urso has played every single freaking game at the end of the season here. There's no way he's not starting. So for me, the answer to my question, for me, who do I want to start in midfield? I want it to be a Pereira, and Mendes midfield. I think it will be an Urso, Mendes, Pereira midfield, because I think Pereira is going to want to go with experience, is going to go with tactical IQ, with game management IQ, all that sort of stuff that doesn't come with young players like Pereira, unfortunately, even though we see him as one of those players, or he can be one of those players in the next year or two. I think he's going to go with experience. So, Adam, do you agree with that? Do you disagree with that? I know you said you agree with it. So, do you want to expand on that?
You're totally correct here in that Urso is just not a good fit for this game. If we're going to have to play through that high press, I just don't see it from Urso, because he likes to take too many chances, and he's not sort of a drop in between the lines midfielder.
He's going to get targeted by NYCFC. Oh, every time he gets the ball, expect one to two players running at him at all times. And he's good enough to get out of it a couple times, but he will lose the ball a couple times. And that is where NYCFC are at their most dangerous.
He's not going to put himself in a position where he can just make a tiny move to shrug off a defender like Uri would. It's not what he does. And so I would much rather, if Uri can't go, first of all, I don't care about lack of games going in. Uri's a veteran. He's had plenty of time to recover and get healthy. It'd have 2 weeks of practice going up until this game. If Uri's healthy, I start him. I personally, and I am of the untrained, unmedical opinion that I just watch a lot of sports and I think Uri's healthy at this point because he's been training long enough. So if I were assuming Uri's healthy, I would start him in that deep six, and then Mendes in the eight, and then Pereira at the 8-10 that he plays. Because I just think that's the best balance of defense and offense and the best tactical precision to play through and apply a press, which is this is going to be a game of pressing. It's going to be two teams employing a high and midfield press, and the game is going to be won by the team that can better play out of it. And we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think I would go with Pereira as the next best thing to just sit back and cover, and then just make the safe pass if Uri can't go.
But the other thing I
think we will see Urso and Mendes, just because that's what Pereira is going to lean on.
The other thing I like about adding Pereira if Yuri's not available, because I do agree with your Yuri thing. I mean, he's been training for weeks and weeks and weeks now. If he's available, I think you slot him in. You give him a minimum of 45 minutes. If he has to go out because of medical reasons, that's fine. You get those 45 minutes from a player who is clearly suited to this game. The one thing I like about the Pereira midfield trio with Mendes and Pereira is Pereira can move up into that number 10 slot to do some of that defensive pressure, which I know Pereira can do as well. That allows a Pereira to come a little bit deeper, get his foot on the ball more, and we're going to lean on him to be really, really impactful in that middle of the field. So I think that would be helpful as well. And Urso, he's had moments this season where he can do that high press, but that's not his game. His game is that midfield snap onto the tackle when the player takes a heavy touch. That's his game. I don't think that high press is moving along. Unless you have anything, yeah. Okay,
I guess this, we will touch on this on a later pod. But do you almost feel like Urso isn't a great fit for this team?
Like, yeah, we're
everyone seems to love him, and he's a great teammate. But his skill set doesn't seem to fit the play style, in my opinion.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that when we do the squad building two-part series that is coming up at the end of the season. That's it's been in my mind. Don't worry about it. Daniel, moving right along here. Kind of sticking with the theme of this or this person or this person, the other really contentious decision, in my opinion, do you start Kamal Miller or do you start Kyle Smith at left back? We did have a question about this at Torres_since87 on Instagram. Says, any chance we see Joao start? I don't think so. I think his season is over. A little bit different scenario, in my opinion, than Yuri Rossell. I don't know if he's been training. I don't think we see him. So, Daniel, Smith, right-footed, very good defensively, or Kamal Miller, pretty good defensively, left-footed?
I'd go with Kyle Smith. I think in a game where we're going to need to use the ball effectively and work it out to the outer channels, I think Kyle Smith can provide, some good good sort of leverage out there on that left-hand side. Even if he doesn't overlap and get down the wing and put a cross in, he does seem to link up fairly well with the central midfield and also with whoever plays in front of him. So I feel like for purpose of ball retention and recycling possession, I think Smith is the player I would put in. And also, with the way New York tend to play sometimes, I don't know if Tinnerholm's going to play on Saturday, but they tend to attack, with those fullbacks, and they like to cut inside and drift in field. And I feel like that right-hand side is very strong for them. If you've got a Tinnerholm, just for example, cutting in off that right-hand side and trying to drive through the box, you've got Cal Smith on his natural right foot who's able to get there and challenge him. And I feel that's good. I mean, I quite like Kamal Miller, but I don't fully trust him at left back, and certainly in possession, I just don't think he's the player that we need. I think he'll panic a little. He'll probably try and knock it long too much, and then we end up giving New York likely another chance with the ball if we don't. So for me, it's Kyle Smith, 100%.
Any opposition to that, Chase? Real quick.
No, I think Kyle Smith is the clear choice, in my opinion, at left back right now. Like Daniel said, I think Kamal's a fine player, but he's just the more, 100% sure hands, safe pair of hands type player. And I think that would bode well if you're kind of looking to fill a gap like we are at left back at the moment.
Okay, so Chase, do you think we see any surprises? One candidate, in my opinion, could be a possible Schlegel for Janssen, and I will save that opinion. Not that I want to see it, but I think it'd be a surprise. Any of those type of changes?
I really just don't. I think whatever.
Maybe even a formational change?
I think whatever the consensus best 11 is, which is kind of that 4-2-3-1 type with I'm not going to name the whole team, but I think that we all kind of know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I don't really see the value, I guess, in kind of going against the way that you've been playing for most of the season. Even if we are we haven't really hit a rough patch of form, I guess, but we haven't been performing to the same levels that we have been previously. It's just, this first playoff game, I don't think now is the time to greatly deviate from system, unless that's something that, Oscar maybe in training has been hitting hard for 2 weeks or something like that, which, if that's the case, then I wouldn't be wholly against it, but I wouldn't really mess with the lineup too much. I wouldn't really mess with, the system that we've been playing. And that even comes off the back of some questions about the center back partnership, which I assume is why you're kind of targeting Janssen, which I can understand. But even still, they're questionable in the air and whatnot, but I still would probably just stick with what we've been going with for a majority of the season,
So I'm going to let you have a rebuttal to this, Chase, and then we'll move on.
Please do.
But the only reason I kind of mentioned Schlegel for Janssen was partly, yes, the aerial thing, and it has become a major issue recently. But also, I think it was you who said they have some small, diminutive, quick attackers. And while Janssen's very, very good at reading and intercepting and tackling players, he's not the fastest player out there. And I think Schlegel's a little bit more agile on his feet and able to take on those players. So that's the only reason I thought that might be a move that could be on the cards. That would definitely be a surprise, but it would make sense, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I guess I can understand that. But also the thing with Schlegel, I don't want to have one incident that, he didn't even get punished for, kind of follow him around. But in a scenario like this, he seems to be a little bit hot-headed at times. And,
you can put it positive or negative, up for the game or hot-headed.
But it's just, especially players like that who are going to maybe get on the ball a little bit and be very quick and try to take him on a lot. It leads me to worry, I guess, if he's going to find himself in a scenario where he might kind of pick up a card or in the box to give a penalty or something like that, which might be a little bit harsh on him, because even though he's been here for a season, he hasn't really played a whole lot for me to kind of say that about him and kind of earmark him, I guess, as that type of player. But it's just not something that I would be willing to take the risk on, particularly in a single elimination playoff game, despite how he might match up a little bit better, at least physically, against these players. Just you know what I'm saying, like the lack of experience, I guess, and what he's shown so far makes me a little bit nervous how he would handle these guys, I guess.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, I think Oscar will think the same thing, more or less. Adam, what realistic tactics overall do you want us to implement? Something you think we'll see?
We'll see a high press, and we'll see tiki-taka. Assuming
you think we'll see tiki-taka?
I think we see the resurgence of tiki-taka. Okay. I think with the two-week break, with Pereira's going to watch NYCFC film from the entire season. He's going to see their press, and he's going to know that if we can break that press with tiki-taka, then it's over for them. If you can break NYCFC's press, they fall apart. Because their backline isn't that great, which is kind of why they high press, because they know that they have to create that back pressure, because letting opposing teams, if they did like kind of a drop back defense, or like a read and react defense, and had a bunch of teams running at their defenders, they would give up a ton of goals. And so if you can break that high press and get to run at those questionable defenders, especially if Tinnerholm's out, ooh, baby, that's going to be fun. Nani and Pereira and Cash are going to have some fun there, and DK too. So yeah, I want to see the return of the tournament high press and tiki-taka pairing. And I think that with the 2 weeks to be able to practice that and kind of reintegrate that into the strategy, and if we can see Uri even better, then that would be what I would go with.
Okay. Daniel, how do you... All the signs are pointing to this game being a high-scoring game. NYCFC are very offensive, very attacking. They've been scoring a lot of goals recently. Orlando City, we have our best players on the pitch. We can score goals any which way. But what do you think will be the mental impact on us being our first playoff game? Yes, it is at home, but it is our first ever playoff game. And NYCFC as well, the fact that it's our first playoff game and they're on the road. So what do you think the mental impact of the playoff game atmosphere will be because it is the first? And also just in general, will it be a little cagey?
Yeah, I kind of expect Orlando is going to be nervous, to be honest with you. I mean, it's kind of strange because we're not going to have a full stadium, you know, to play in it. So it's like, it might actually help Orlando, to be honest with you, that it's not going to be a full stadium, just because you think of how the players might be feeling, but think of how 25,000 supporters would feel. You know, and that can...
Every loose touch is going to be a nail biter.
Well, that's it. And I watched a documentary yesterday, actually, and it was an interview with... it was on Netflix. It was like with Jose Mourinho, and he talked about when he had Porto, he took FC Porto and they won at Manchester United and knocked him out of the Champions League. I don't know if you remember that. It's quite a while back. Right at the beginning of his managerial career. But what he said was quite interesting, because I'm pretty sure other teams would, you know, they do this as well. But he says he would listen for the crowd, and like when the crowd wants you to push for a goal, you'll hear them. They'll be literally shouting and pushing and cheering, trying to get that team to go and score. But when you can hear the apprehension, and I've been at stadiums before, you know, particularly Leeds, like when you've had a really nervous atmosphere, when you're like kind of like, you know, a goal either way could really finish the game. You know, we're not going to really have that in Orlando. It's going to be like, well, okay, the stadium's going to be fairly loud, but it's not going to be as loud as it would be if we could have everybody in. You know, New York could benefit from it, but Orlando could as well, because I think that any excessive nerves they might have could be mitigated by the fact that you don't have that pressure in the stadium. So I'm not sure the psychological impact of the playoff game is going to have as huge an impact. You know, as long as they do what Chase said, just stick to what you know and play the way that you've done this season, I feel like they might be able to navigate it. The biggest concern for me is when the first goal goes in. If it goes against Orlando, then you're going to see what they're made of, basically. Then you're going to see how much they've really improved this season. So it's going to be more about keeping a cool head, forgetting that it's a playoff game, if you can do that, and just being sensible, playing smart, and you know, navigating your way through, gradually making your foothold through the game. And New York will do the same thing. But they will probably be comforted by the fact as well that the stadium's going to be half empty. So it's kind of tosses it all up in the air, really.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it's going to go. I think we will start, like you said, I think it'll start as a cagey match, but maybe it will open up, you know, in the ending stages of the first half and definitely in the second half. You know, players do always talk about how first 10 minutes, it's kind of like, oh my God, it's a playoff match. And then you realize it's just another match. And you're going out to win. You've trained for 2 weeks. You've really studied up on your opponent. Do all the stuff you need to do. And yes, it's going to be a match on the margins, but do everything you need to do to win. And so hopefully the players can get through those first playoff match jitters and really turn on the heat and get us a couple goals for a comfortable victory. But obviously, you never know. Let's move over to.
I will go out on a limb and I'll say that I actually believe Orlando's favoured. You know, they've benefited from not having to play in front of the fans all season, to be honest.
I think it's helped him.
Yeah, I think it's helped him because in the past years, the atmosphere has been somewhat toxic at times and, you know, and it's probably benefited them. And the MLS is back tournament. They didn't have their own fans. They were maybe kind of able to just reset and reboot and get into their groove with a little less pressure. And I feel like that it's probably benefited them in some ways, you know.
Chase, Adam, do you have anything to like add to that? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I see the point about fans being a double-edged sword and sometimes it can be nerve-wracking and sometimes it can be very supportive. At the end of the day, though, I know the stats bear out that home field advantage is big in MLS, but I honestly think that has more to do with the archaic travel rules than the stadium and the atmosphere. At the end of the day, these guys are professionals. They get up and to play the game. They've done it their entire lives. I just find it hard to believe that a bunch of people yelling is going to distract veteran professional athletes.
It does. It makes a big difference. And I feel like
it makes a difference. I don't know how huge of a difference it makes. I think the more difference that playing away makes is the unfamiliarity with the stadium, like your morning routine, the travel. It can be exhausting.
Time difference is a big
thing. Time difference. Like, that's more of a difference to me than people yelling.
Fans in the stadium,
yeah,
is an unquantifiable
exactly
difference, but yeah. It is there.
It is and there. I'm not saying it's not there.
No,
I'm
just saying
I don't know how much of a factor it is.
It's not even so much yelling. It's
compared to those other things.
It's not like it's not like the abuse you get from the fans. It's just the support that they give the home team.
Yeah,
you know, and that's well, like you, Gavin says, it's unquantifiable.
Even then, so. Especially if you're on the pitch and it all kind of melds together, crowds can kind of sound the same after a while. It's kind of da 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 da. And you know, you go to 20 different stadiums in MLS, they all sound something like that.
So yes, until those that kind of like what he Daniel was talking about with the Man United game for Jose Mourinho, when. You've heard how loud the stadium gets when there's a close chance and we're chasing a game. That stadium gets loud. We, us fans, we do push for Orlando to keep attacking, to keep making chances. I remember the RSL match at the beginning of the season. That stadium got loud because we were excited for the new season under a new coach. We had just made a couple of really good chances in front of goal. And it was loud. It was very loud all around the stadium. Yeah. And so like that... That gives your team a momentum boost. And yes, we did not get the goal, but in some instances, that momentum boost gives in the next 5 to 10 minutes, that does give them a goal, even though you're not continuing that scream of push to the players. It gives them a momentum boost, it gives them more confidence, and it unquantifiably not scares, but that's the only word I can think of. It kind of puts the opponents in a shell a bit. To have that 12, it's kind of like a 12th man against you. It's hard to quantify. It's a very,
it very hard to quantify.
Thing, but I do think Daniel has a point when saying the lack of fans has hurt Orlando in some aspects, but helped Orlando because we have been a team that has had monkeys on our back in terms of playoffs, in terms of rivals, in terms of just being good in general. And when you have the pressure of the fans adding onto that, it's almost like another 12th man except onto you because of the pressure. When you take the pressure off, then you can just play soccer, focus on your soccer, and you can start to breed success without that pressure to climb it there. So I think Daniel has a brilliant point saying that it's very possible that the lack of fans in the stadium, it not being a full stadium, while it is, we are the home team, could be to our advantage.
It could go either way, you know.
Chase, anything to add on there?
I can kind of understand what Daniel's saying, because it's like, even if a fan base is like positive, which I, you know, for the most part, we probably are. I mean, I don't even know. Like, to be honest, I'm not in whole parts of the like supporter section or like outside of the, you know, different sections. I can only see what goes on in my section, basically. That was a very long way of putting that. But like, even if it's positive, I still think it can add to the pressure of a situation. You know what I'm saying? So if there are 50,000 fans, like, you know, cheering you on, and there have been players like Jesus Navas, like, he's famously kind of said, like, the pressure that went on with playing for like Man City was a little bit too much for him. So it's a little bit of a player by player basis. So I think, you know, if a player is, I don't want to say mentally strong enough, because that sounds like a bit disregarding of people who don't deal well with pressure. But if a player is mentally strong enough to kind of push through regardless of what is happening in the stadium, it won't affect them. But if there are players who are fairly, you know, sensitive, I guess, to what's going on in the stadium, whether it's positive or negative, I think that it can affect them. So if a few of the new guys that we brought in are of that kind of ilk, I guess, I can kind of see where Daniel is coming from, because just with less fans, when you're more so just focused on what you're doing on the field rather than, like you said, kind of responding to what they're saying, it just takes a little bit of the pressure off and you're allowed to focus more on just what you're doing. But I mean, it's hard to say, because I've never played in front of 25,000 people, so I don't know how I would feel, what the response would be, what if I would even, you know, notice fans at all. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Let's move on to NYCFC now. Let's just spend a little bit of time on them as they are our opponent. Adam, I think you were up next. NYCFC, most shots in the league, most shot creating actions in the league. Seventh closest average distance per shot, which means they were really close.
That makes a lot of sense.
16.8 yards away from goal, so inside the 18-yard box on average. How do we even? I know you're going to say pressing, but go on a little bit more than that. How do we even begin to nullify their attacking threat and chance creation in our defensive third?
So this is kind of cool, because you looked up a bunch of numbers. I watched some tape on them, and your numbers are basically just confirming what I saw on the video. So, like, together we make one whole analyst.
Seriously.
And that's absolutely correct. What they're going to do is they're going to get forward. They're gonna try to get either Morales or Ring in some space with a little bit of time, so they can pick out a pass and they can play like a little 1-2 into the box, and then they're gonna take a shot inside the box. And they do that so much, and they're very good at getting free to get that shot. So what you're gonna have to do, yes, you are correct, it's gonna be a pressing game, but the defenders have to step up literally. You can't give, especially Castellanos. Castellanos loves to move. He loves to move. His attacking positioning is so great, because he'll time his run, and then he'll know where Morales or Ring want to put the ball, and he'll time his run perfectly, and he'll fake out a defender, and then he'll move, and then he'll be there to get the shot off. I bet there's a stat for this, but I bet he's among the league leaders in like shots per game, or at least recently since he's been their striker.
Second highest XG per 90, 0.65.
Yeah, so he takes a lot of shots. You're going to need a center back to step up when he starts to move, whether it be Carlos or Janssen. There basically needs to be a guy who's like, oh, Castellanos is making a run, let me get in his way. That's kind of what we're going to have to do. And it's... unless they're going to adjust their play style and play through Matarita and put a bunch of crosses in, which I don't think they're going to do, especially if Tanner Holm's out, because Tanner Holm's the better crosser. Then you're not going to have to worry about those crosses so much. So you can actually afford to kind of rough up Castellanos a little bit and put maybe have Mendez. Remember early in the season when Mendez would be kind of like that spy on the offensive playmaker, like and against Miami when he would kind of zone in on Rodolfo Pizarro and mess with him a bit. Mm-hmm. I would have Mendez kind of go one-on-one defensively with Maxi Morales, and then maybe have Pereira kind of buzz around Alex Ring, and then have Jansen or Carlos take halves of the box, and anytime Castellanos runs into the box, just have one of them blanket him and kind of play the equivalent of a press man coverage just with those three, and then have the rest create your zone. Is how I would deal with that. Kind of like a mixture between man and zone.
Okay. Chase, I think it's your turn now. What weaknesses do you see in NYCFC? And how do you think we can create attacking threat versus them?
Well, they have kind of struggled, particularly in the back half of the season, to keep a clean sheet. I think they kept Toronto scoreless, and I don't know if they had a clean sheet in like the five or six games previous before that. So, you know, they are a team that can leak goals. I think that's in part to them kind of in the same, not system, but just they attack through their fullbacks a little bit as well. Like Tanner Holm is oftentimes their most creative player. And, you know, Matarita is the same thing as well. And Matarita can even be a defensive liability at times. And I don't think that their center back pairing is overly strong. Like, I don't think that they're weak by any sense of the word. But when you look at Collins and, you know, Maxime Cheneau, like, they definitely have the capability to leak goals as well. And I think that Daryl DK is the type of striker that would do well against this partnership, quite frankly, because, you know, he's going to be able to pounce on any mistakes. And he, you know, if he's given a chance, I feel fairly confident in him being able to take it, which is a good thing to say about such a young player. And even if you look at their goalkeeper, Sean Johnson, particularly against us, but all throughout kind of his time in the MLS, he's a little bit error prone. He has like a good ability to stop some shots, but he will, you know, let a ball in every now and again. And I see a lot of people say that he's good with his feet. And, you know, I haven't necessarily looked at the stats to kind of back it up, but he's never necessarily striked me as an overly capable goalkeeper. Like a lot of like U.S. men's national team people will say that about him. And I don't really personally think that. So I actually think their attack is very good, very dangerous. And their midfield pairing of Alexander Ring, especially, and Keaton Parks as well, is pretty decent. And I think their defense is going to be the ability where we can hurt them, because even though, you know, Tanner Holm is such a good player, they have been known to leak goals, particularly in the, you know, their games leading up to the season. They conceded three against Chicago. They were able to outgun them, but you know, they still conceded three to not even a playoff team. And with the New York Red Bulls game, I think that they conceded two, even though they scored five. So I think that there will be goals in this game for us, and it is just up to us to kind of, you know, not allow them to be as free scoring as they have been previously. And I think hitting them, particularly at their center backs, is the key to that.
Yeah. I think that's very well said. Now, Daniel, NYCFC have the second most possession average in the league. It's like in the mid 50s, 56 or 57, something like that. And while we have talked about press, we should press. I mean, another stat I'll bring up again, unlike the stats man today, they have the second most errors leading to a shot in the whole entire league this season, with 10 errors leading to a direct shot, which is pretty high. I mean, it's the most in the league. That being said, do you think we will pressure them, or do you think we'll sit off and kind of let them have the ball and go a little counterattacky?
Well, I'll go with two answers to that. The first answer is what I would do, and I would go man to man and press the hell out of them and make them make mistakes. That's just me. Mm-hmm. Fight fire with fire, go toe to toe, I think.
I can tell you, you're a Bielsa fan.
I've always been like, that's always been my favorite style, and I just feel like, you know, we hear the whole tag a protagonist. Well, no, be a protagonist then.
And we've done it before. We did it against Atlanta.
We've done it. We've done it fantastically well. I mean, the way we pressed Atlanta, particularly in that away game, was brilliant to watch.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, and do it again. You know, I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like when you have a younger squad of players, like, I feel like, yeah, it's the first playoff game, but this is also a lesson for them. It's an adventure. You've got to go out there and always be the best version of yourself. And just like we've said, you know, go with what you've done this season. Do what you've done well. Press the fuck out of these players, you know. Just give it a go. Give it a good game. And don't be scared of failure. I mean, that's really what I would do. That's me. Now, the other answer is, what do I think we'll do? And I think we'll play the low block, and I think we're going to play a bit more direct. That's what I think we'll do. I like you guys' thoughts about playing Rossell and giving him an opportunity, but I also feel like if you can't get a full game out of Rossell, then you may as well not bother using him at all, because you can't really afford to be making a change at halftime. What happens if you're dominating the game, but you still have to take him out for medical reasons? I mean, you're going to disrupt the rhythm of your team and possibly lose that momentum. So I feel like we just don't have the depth to play our favourite style all the time, and we'll probably end up playing deeper with a lower block and trying to hit the ball to DK, trying to get him to hold it and get his runners to run off him. And I think that's probably what we'll do. But obviously my favourite approach is the one we mentioned before that.
Here's the good thing about that. That's kind of what Chicago tried to do. And I know Chicago gave up, how many goals did they give up? 4 goals. I know Chicago gave up 4 goals, but Chicago is also a very sloppy team. But that's kind of what Chicago tried to do. And NYC had a lot of trouble with Robert Berich, who he have a double against them.
I think I have it pulled up. He had
one goal.
Frankowski had two.
But Berich was getting, he had the goal, he was getting chances all day, and he was just bullying a China shopping their center backs, bullying them. Like, DK has the same kind of frame. Berich is a very big striker. Kind of actually the same size as DK. DK is stronger, but Berich is big. And they were playing very direct to him and kind of just letting Berich get on the ball in the box and then sending runners at him to create chaos. And they got 3 goals off of it. So if we do that, especially if we have Pereira pulling the strings in the middle, we can create goals like that. It's just not going to look as pretty as if we do the tiki-taka combination and the high press. Which, if you can pull it off, that's a way to dominate a game and suck the life out of NYCFC. If we're going to play that low block and then play that direct game, it's going to be a shootout and we're going to give up 3 goals. We're also going to have to score 3 goals. That's just how it's going to have to happen. If that does happen, say it's 3-3 at the end of 90, here's where our advantage is. They have no attacking subs worth a damn at all. They had their closest thing is Ismail Tajori Shirati with 3 goal contributions on the year, because they loaned Alexander Matrita to Saudi Arabia somewhere, I think.
Mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia.
Doesn't matter. I don't know why they did that, but they did.
He didn't want to be in America anymore. I don't know. Oh, really? I don't remember what it was, but that was the story. He didn't.
Oh,
want to be in
his wife is his wife in Romania is pregnant. And,
Now he's in Saudi Arabia, though.
I think, I don't know if his wife is actually Romanian. I know he's Romanian, and I think that's where his family is. But
anyway, since they don't have Matrita, they've been starting Medina, who was their super sub, and Medina's been playing well. But they have no one on the bench, so if it comes to that extra time, we can bring on Benji Michel, we can bring on Alexander Alvarado, we can bring on Mateus Ayas, we can bring on Cheshire Akindele. We got options there. They ain't got shit. And so if the game becomes a shootout that'll go 120 minutes, then I think Orlando City could have a very significant advantage in that extra time with some fresh legs actually worth a damn.
All right. Well, that segues perfectly into my last question of this part one. So Daniel, it's going to go to you first, and all three of you, of course, going to answer this question. Score predictions.
Okay. I think it'll be a higher scoring game. I'll commit to 3-2, but I honestly can't tell you which way.
Okay. Chase?
You know, I'll put like a caveat on it. Like with any playoff game and any kind of single elimination type game in sports, like, you know, you have to prepare for it like tactically, but it's also just really down to who's up for it and who's ready to go grab it for themselves, I guess. And you have to approach that game with, or this game with that type of mentality. And we have nothing really to go off of. I know we have the MLS Cup, or MLS is back rather, and that's not necessarily like the greatest benchmark, I feel like, but we have nothing really to go off of it against us. But I do agree that we match up well against NYCFC. I don't think, you know, the biggest issue has been the aerial presence, and I don't think that that is going to show its head as much this game. So I'm going to actually go with the 2-1. So it's relatively low scoring when you look at the two sides.
Adam.
My prediction will absolutely change based on the type of tactics we play. So I'm going to give two predictions. If we come out in a high press look and we can pull it off, I think it's 3-1 Orlando. I don't think we keep a clean sheet because we're terrible at that, but I think it'll be a fairly comfortable 3-1 Orlando if we can pull off a high press. Now, if we come out in that low block playing direct, I think it's 3-3 at the end of 90. And I'm going to say Orlando gets one goal in extra time to win it. I think we're deservedly the favorites in this game just because our style and our players match up well with NYC and we have more depth. And for what it's worth, we do have home field. So I'm going to give Orlando the edge, but I think if we're able to play protagonist soccer and we're able to pull it off, it'll be much more comfortable than if we give them a little too much respect.
All right, here's mine. 2-2 nail biter. Maybe even to the death, penalties, the lottery decides it, and we probably go through on penalties.
Gavin, why do you hate us?
I know. I can see NYCFC scoring multiple goals, and I can see us scoring multiple goals. I cannot see either team breaking away. I can't. I don't see a 3-2. I don't see a 4-3 in overtime. I think it gets to that 2-2 mark at the 90, and then both coaches, kind of like what happened in the Open Cup. Remember when we played them in the running of the wall game?
Yes, and yes, we were winning. Remember that game.
Yes, we were winning, and then they scored in the last minute, and then the extra time was just a dud. It was like NYCFC tried to create stuff, and we were like defensive, but for the most part, neither team was really pushing because they didn't want to give up the winning goal in extra time. Everybody was being cautious. I think that's what might happen. Everybody will be cautious. There'll be no protagonism, no protagonistic intent.
That doesn't feel like Oscar Pereja to me.
Really? How many times this season have we been in a close 2-1 game
that is
and
regular
he
season.
Shuts up shop it's in the different. 75th minute?
It's different. It doesn't.
Yeah, but here's
when
been
it's
Oscar's
on the,
criticisms.
When everything's on the line. When everything is on the line, it doesn't feel like Oscar Pereja to me to just close up shop an extra time. It just doesn't.
So here's been Oscar Pereja's criticisms when going into playoffs, when going into important games with FC Dallas. Part of it, the reason why he never won an MLS Cup there is because he was not protagonistic in the playoffs. He was cautious in the playoffs. And he kind of went away from his values to lock in and have that playoff mentality, that playoff style of play where you have to win dirty. And that doesn't fit him. He hates playing dirty. That's his quote that they always bring up. And then we win every game 2-1.
Do you think that might change?
It might change. He may have learned more in Mexico. He may have just changed as a coach. I believe coaches can change throughout the progress of their careers. Maybe he will go out and prove me wrong. I'm basing it off of what I've seen this season. He has gone into his shell a bit in the end of games, which every coach does, but earlier than I've expected him to, and past MLS Cup playoff runs. I'm still very excited for the game. I am predicting us to win. I'm I just think it'll be a nail biter. 2-2, maybe a goal in extra time. Adam, you've kind of convinced me with the subs thing, but
we just have better attacking subs.
Yeah, we just have better attacking subs. That's a good point. But yeah, nail biter 2-2 for me. All right, that's it for part one. We will answer a few fan questions in part two right after this. All right, and we're back to answer some fan questions. And first comes from our very loyal fan, Charlotte at Kirby Hazard. So, Daniel, I'm going to go to you. Who are your players to watch in this game in terms of who you think will have a good game for both Orlando and a good game for NYCFC?
For NYC, their attacking fullbacks are the guys that I want to watch. You know, if Tinnerholm's fit, then obviously him and Matarito on the other side. I feel like they'll compress play in the middle and try and force Orlando to get narrow, and then they'll use the guys on the overlap and try and get in to get those crosses in. Now, I'm not saying those crosses will be high and 6 feet in the air, but I think that's how they're going to try and find their way in, you know, is by creating some overloads out wide. And so how to do that, you need those guys to be part of it, just like we need Juan and Moutinho to do the same for us. So for New York, those are the guys that we watch. And for Orlando, I mean, the key players for me is going to be Pereira and Nani, because it's a big game situation and you expect your big players to show up. And I would say one of those two is going to be a key to any positive result that Orlando ends up getting.
All righty, Chase. At Fresco Esco, who is the underrated team you don't want to face?
Oh, man. I don't want to say that they're underrated, but just based off our form, I guess, in the regular season against them, if we come up against Miami somehow in the playoffs, I would be very, very concerned with how we would do in that game. Not necessarily just because I think they're better than us as a team or anything like that, but they have just been a bit of a bogey side, at least in their first year in the league against us. And that would concern me as well. And another team that I would actually be a little bit concerned about is the other team that they're playing in their playing game, Nashville. Not even necessarily just because of that 3-2 game, but they like Miami are like it's their first year in the MLS, and they are going to want to push themselves much like we are going to want to push ourselves, because it's our first time in the playoffs. And they are a team which, unlike, you know, like a Philadelphia or Toronto, I think that they're going to approach the game with really nothing to lose, and they're just going to look to hit us, and they're maybe not going to be as tentative just because of the lack of expectation, you know, even compared to what we have with how we played in the regular season. Of the kind of lower ranked teams, I would say either of the side that are going to come out of that play-in game, rather, I think on Friday, they are the underrated team, I guess, that I would be a little bit concerned to play.
It's funny you say that, because we face NYCFC, and in the bracket, we face the winner of Philadelphia and either Nashville or Miami. So if we win this game and the underrated team beats Philadelphia, either of those teams are the teams we're playing. And it's funny you answer that way, because that's exactly where I would have gone with my answer.
Yeah, if they're coming off a win against the Supporter Shield winners, that would make me a little bit nervous. I don't want to go as far as say like I would be scared, or I would necessarily think that we were going to lose the game. But Miami has shown that they could beat us, and you know, Nashville are going to have literally nothing to lose in this game, much like Miami as well. But yeah, they would scare me a little bit.
All right, Adam, I kind of want to get your thoughts on this as well. Who are your players to watch for this game? Kind of the same, basically the same question that Charlotte had.
For NYCFC, I think the player to watch is Alexander Ring. He's their engine that makes the whole thing go. He kind of plays a similar role. If Uri played a little more advanced, that's Alex Ring. And he's very good at dealing with the different ways that teams try to attack NYCFC's attack, because you can't sit back and defend them where they'll pick you apart. So he's very good at dealing with like a high press or midfield press or just whatever defense that they get thrown at. And he's very good at facilitating and making sure their attack still works. So if you want to see how NYCFC is doing, look at Alex Ring. And I think how he's able to play will really affect this game and how we're able to deal with him and prevent him from just having his way with our midfield is going to really affect this game. For Orlando, I think this is Cash's time to shine a little bit. He can be a bit hot and cold, as we've seen this year. It's been more hot than usual, but he still had hot streaks and cold streaks. And just with the mentality that he seems to have, and he's posted a bunch of stuff on social media, and I think he's psyching himself up for this game because, you know, it's his first playoff game. He's been the guy, I think, more than anyone that's been through all this shit with us. You know, the losing seasons, the disappointment in his own career, him growing up with us before our eyes and then blossoming under Pareja. I think that this game just calls for Cash to come in and just score a golazo and just do something spectacular. So I think we're going to see a bit of old Cash and that he's going to maybe run himself out a bit, you know, cause he doesn't do that so much anymore. He can play a full 90 now, but he didn't used to be able to do that. I think especially knowing that he has like Alvarado behind him or whatever, or Tesho behind him or Benji behind him that can come in. I think he's going to run himself out by the 60th minute, and we'll see if he can do something spectacular.
It's funny that that's your answer, because kind of similar to what I said to Chase earlier, the two players I was thinking was Mueller and Ring. I think those are the key players. You know, we've seen Mueller in big games go missing sometimes, especially early on. I need him on the ball. I need him showing for the ball. I need him there. I need him to be an option for us, because if he's not, we are going to struggle in attack. It's not to say that he is the main man in our attack, which obviously his numbers say he is, but you know, just being an option for Pereira to pass the ball out to, so then we can pass and move. Him being able to press defensively, Mueller is very key. He needs to be up for this game. Obviously, he will be up for this game because it's a playoff game. He is psyching himself up, hopefully, but I need him the second the whistle goes to be going. I'm fine with him going out in the 60th minute for Benji if he's going to put in a real, real, real hard shift. And Alexander Ring, he is a top quality player in MLS, very underrated in my opinion. Like you said, he is their engine. So we're going to have to make sure he doesn't have a good game. We're probably going to have a man marking scheme on him. Make sure he's always getting covered at all times, because he's that important to NYCFC's team, in my opinion. So hopefully he doesn't have a good game. Hopefully he has an off game. Hopefully they all have an off game and they score 7 own goals and we get to go into the next round easily. That's obviously probably not going to happen. Chase, do you know if NYCFC still have to travel the same day of the game, or has the league changed the rules at all for the playoffs?
You know what? That's crazy. I was actually just about to ask that question, if they have to do, or if they can do charter flights, or if they have to do same day like we've done here. I would imagine, I'm actually going to look it up real fast, but I think
MLS is doing charter for all playoff games.
Cause it's
so
like,
that means it's not same day anymore?
Wasn't like, I think Orlando was even kind of granted the ability to do that for the Atlanta game. So I think if they're willing to make an exception in the middle of the season, I think that they'll make one, and probably for the playoffs. But hold on, I'll look it up real fast. You can like cut this out.
I really hate MLS travel rules, by the way.
I know. Yeah.
It's embarrassing for a professional league.
Especially with the amount of travel.
Yeah, the fact that there's a limited amount of charter flights per season, like that's a broke boy thing right there. That's a broke league rule.
I was about to say, money makes the world go around.
I actually can't.
Charter flights for every single playoff game.
Yeah, and also with light of, you know, the international players being granted the ability to do charter flights, to get back in time for the game, I imagine that the whole teams would be able to charter and stay overnight. Because if I'm Don Garber, I don't want teams, you know, showing up for a playoff game, which is, you know, kind of the spectacle of a league almost, if you have that kind of system. I don't want them showing up, you know, having flown in at noon and, you know, not well rested, not, you know, able to kind of be at their best, I guess. So I suppose that they would want
like
their teams.
Could
their
you
best.
Imagine like Dallas flying to Seattle same day?
Yeah, that would be
Lord.
That would be shambolic.
Tim Potty for the MLS. Man.
Yep. All right. Well, that should just about do it. Thanks, guys, for joining me late on this Wednesday night. Please don't hesitate to let us know your thoughts on our thoughts. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review. Do the survey linked in the description. And Daniel, where can our listeners find you at?
In the pub.
Have a good night, Daniel. Chase.
Daniel, sleepy time pub.
Yes.
You,
Chase.
You can find me. Sorry, my bad. You can find me on Instagram at Chase W. Crowley. And you can find me on Twitter at Vamos OCSC.
And Adam.
I messed up my thing. Okay, let's try it again. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Kosher Taco Truck, and check out my Twitter for a poster for a taco dinner that I am doing. It's going to be, I know taco dinner sounds kind of kitschy, but it's going to be like traditional. Well, it's not going to be traditional, but it's going to be like high quality culinary techniques, handmade tortillas. It's going to be really something special. So there's info on a flyer that my sister made on my Twitter. I think it's one of the most recent things I posted. So go look at that. I'm going to make it my pinned tweet until it happens. So, yeah.
Adam is really taking advantage of these free advertising opportunities, guys. It's crazy. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Going quickly here, Nani gets in behind. Here's Nani with a chip. It's 1-1.